adversity. Where'd that come from? I was trying to tell Dr. Johnson, thank you for that song. It went so well with the message I'm going to give. Somehow, I think many modern Christians have gotten the idea that once you become a Christian, you don't have to face adversity any longer. I don't know where we got that idea. It wasn't true of any Bible characters, was it? Do you know anyone who's never faced adversity in their life of any kind? I don't. In fact, I think many times we feel like there's more adversity in our life than there is calm and quiet. How do we deal with adversity? And so we are doing a series on the book of Joseph called Rising Above Adversity, Lessons from the Life of Joseph. And the lessons that we're going to talk about today may be the hardest lessons to learn of all, the hardest ones to deal with, the hardest ones to incorporate, the hardest ones to rise above. How do you deal with someone who offends you, someone who hates you, someone who betrays you and abandons you all at the same time? Now, if you think about those words, there are people who can offend you, and they can offend you whether you know them or not. But it takes someone who knows you well to hate you. It takes someone who knows you well to, when they do hate you, it really cuts you to the core. It takes someone who knows you well to betray you. And when someone who knows you well betrays you, the core is ripped out. And when someone who you know and love and who you should be able to trust abandons you, words cannot describe the hole in your life. Before we talk about the adversity of being offended, hated, betrayed, and abandoned, let's look at where we've come from so far. The first sermon, we talked about removing the skeletons from the family closet. Removing the skeletons from the family closet. If we could move the slide forward. We reminded you that Joseph came from a line of patriarchs. And that line went back to his great-grandfather Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, his father Jacob. And throughout all of those families that there were, although they were men who knew God and who God had made promises to, they were people who had their moments of doubt, people who had their moments of trying to make the promises of God come true through their own devisings. We discovered that the home in which Joseph was raised was filled with angry, jealous, deceitful, rebellious people whose rivalry was fueled by favoritism and who wavered between doubt and faith. That's his background. His first adversity was his heritage. His second adversity was, in a sermon we did last week titled He Adds, the second adversity was the death of his mother. The death of his mother. He was about 12 years old or so when that death occurred, and he would be left under the charge of either his stepmother Leah, and his stepmother Leah and his mother Rachel were really big at doing a good job at sibling rivalry, or his mother's handmaid, who was kind of another mother, Bilhah, and all the confusion that would cause and all the grief that would cause. And then we saw the third adversity was when Joseph became the favorite. Remember, we talked about that last week, how he was sent off to work with his stepbrothers, all the handmaid, the brothers from the two handmaids, and that they kind of treated him as a slave, as a servant. He complained to his father Joseph about it. It was that point that Jacob, when Jacob was 17, he made Joseph a coat, the Bible calls of many colors. It was a coat that would be a coat of honor that royalty would wear, a coat that you would not wear while you're working. And after that, his brothers, it says, hated them and would not speak peacefully to them. Then we had those two dreams, one of the sheaves bowing down to him and one of the sun, moon, and stars bowing down. And it says that his brothers hated him even more and became jealous of him. But his father kept the sayings in his heart. And now we come to the fourth adversity. He was hated, betrayed, and abandoned. You remember the story? Apparently, the favoritism not only continued, but it got bigger and greater. You remember the story? Joseph's brothers go off, 10 brothers at least, because Benjamin's probably about 5 or 6 years old. They go off to take care of the flocks where there's more pasture land. But Joseph doesn't go. Joseph stays at home. He's 17, and he stays at home with Dad. Anybody see some more favoritism popping up all over the place? Don't think for a moment that on the way to Shechem, which was about 50 miles, that the 10 brothers weren't talking to each other and saying, "The little runt, he always gets off. We're out here in this hot sun, and he's home in the tent cooling his shades." You'd think Dad would see. I mean, that's probably putting it mildly, don't you think? I mean, come on. If it were you, wouldn't you be a little bit, I'll use the word ticked. Wouldn't you be a little ticked that Joseph was home wearing his coat, being pampered by Dad? I think we would. And one day, Dad says, "You know, it's been a while since the boys have been gone, and they're at Shechem." And remember, Shechem was where the boys had caused some damage earlier and wreaked some revenge and been deceitful to the Shechemites, even though they may have had a good reason for it, so to speak. And probably Jacob's wondering, "I wonder if the Shechemites are getting their revenge." I don't know what he thought Joseph would do, but he said, "Please go check on your brothers, see that they're doing well." So Joseph said, "Of course, Dad, I'll go." Puts on his coat, grabs a sack lunch or two, because it's 50 miles away, so he's probably going to be 2-3 days at the least. And he trots off to find his brothers in Dothan. In Shechem. He gets to Shechem, and they're nowhere to be found. And he's looking around the fields of Shechem, and somebody comes and says, "What are you looking for?" And he said, "Well, I've got 10 brothers who are watching my dad's flocks. Have you seen them?" "Oh, yeah, I saw them, and I overheard them say they're going to Dothan, which is another 15 miles away." That's another 5, 4, 5, 6 hours, okay? So Joseph walks off down the road to find his brothers. I don't know how far they were off when they first spotted him, but it says he was a far way off. Maybe he was coming up a hill, or maybe and they were able to look down that hill and see him coming. And they looked and they said, "Look who's coming." They recognized him not because they saw his face, they saw the coat. And the moment they saw the coat, that Joseph wasn't planning on doing any work, because you don't work in that coat with long sleeves and long that goes down to the ankles. They knew he wasn't coming to help. Probably figured he was coming to spy on them again, to figure out what they were doing so he could go back and tell Daddy one more time. Here comes the dreamer who thinks he's going to be in charge of us. And the more they talk, very briefly, as he's walking towards them, the deeper their anger and the deeper their hatred. And even though it's their brother, they conspire to kill him and to blame an animal for doing it. The hatred had to be pretty deep, don't you think? The jealousy had to be huge. And as they talked, they kind of continued to fuel each other's hatred and each other's anger. Have you ever noticed that? When people talk about someone else and they start bringing up somebody's bad points, they almost get to the point where they try to do each other in and try to outdo each other by seeing who can come up with the worst bad point. You recognize that at all? Besides me? And so they determine they're going to do it. They're going to kill him. So Scripture says Joseph arrives, and they say they're going to kill him. But when Reuben heard about it, I remember Reuben's the oldest, he rescued him out of their hands, saying, let's not take his life. How can we face that if we kill him? Let's just throw him in the pit and let nature take its course. Then we can say we didn't really kill him. And we'll blame it on a wild animal. And in the back of his mind, he thought that once they weren't looking, he'd rescue Joseph from the pit and send him back to Dad. But you know the story. They see a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead, and they were bearing balm and gum and myrrh on their way down to Egypt. Had to pause for a moment. Did you catch the irony of that? The spices they're carrying are spices for embalming and for a funeral. It's almost as if they said, maybe it's a sign we're doing the right thing after all. Forgot one small point. I'm going to go back to it. When they first threw him in the pit and took his coat off, it says there was no water in the pit. In other words, they chose a pit that would make sure he wouldn't live very long. And then while he's in the pit, screaming at the top of his lungs, for someone help me, get me out of here, they sit down and eat a meal together. You kind of wonder what they might have said to each other while they're eating the meal. Do you think that some of them might be feeling a little guilty and they're afraid to really talk about it much because they don't want anybody else to think they're getting a little soft on Joseph? Do you think they're talking about anything else but what's happening and trying to hide the fact that they're feeling guilty? Probably. They see the Ishmaelites coming. Then Judah said to his brothers, apparently Reuben excused himself and walked off for a while. He said, what's good is it going to kill our brother and conceal his blood? Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites. But just then some Midianite traders came by and they drew Joseph up, lifted him out, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and he was taken off to Egypt. Reuben returns, goes to look in the pit to see if he can take Joseph out, and he recognizes that he's gone, and in his sorrow, he tears his own clothes. He returns to his brother and said, the boy's gone, and where shall I go? In other words, he's saying, how am I going to tell Dad? They took his coat and they soaked it in blood. They took it back with them to their father, showed it to Jacob, and he says, it's my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. Then Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort Jacob, but he refused to be comforted and said, no, I shall go down to Sheol, the grave, to my son, mourning. Thus his father wept for him. Boy, talk about raw emotions. Talk about dealing with difficulty. Talk about adversity. I'm not sure who had the worst adversity. There's Jacob's adversity. His son is dead. The son of his favorite wife, Rachel. The son who was the son of his old age. And I really don't know for sure. I'm reading a little bit between the lines. I'm having a hard time envisioning that Jacob didn't really completely believe, or that he believed everything they said. I'm having a hard time envisioning that Jacob just nodded his head and said, wow, that's a tragic story you boys are telling me. I doubt all 10 of those boys could look Dad in the eye when they're telling the story without giving something away that there was a little bit more to the story than they were telling. And over all those years between Joseph's 17th year when he was taken captive and his 30th year, when the reunion, 33rd year, when the reunion take place, I wonder how many times Jacob questioned in his mind the story that his sons told and retold about what happened to Joseph. How would he deal with his love for his sons and this preposterous, somewhat preposterous story they told? How would he deal with his own doubts, not wanting to believe that they had anything to do with Joseph's death, but not wanting to believe that he just died by an animal? And then there's the 10 brothers. I'm not sure who had the more difficult trip. Joseph, who would be going about 300 miles to Egypt, which would take about 15, 20, 25 days. Or the 10 brothers back 65 miles to Dad. Can you imagine the discussion for those 65 miles, 3, 4, 5 days with the flock? You got the story down? Can you imagine the emotions that are going through them? The guilt, the distrust of each other, fear of what Dad's going to do if he ever finds out. Can you imagine all those emotions going through them as they make their way back to meet Jacob and say, "Here's the coat we found from Joseph"? I wonder if any of them got much sleep on the way. It must have been a horrendous trip home. And then there's Joseph. Days looking over his shoulder, wondering if his brothers might change their mind. 15-20 days asking all kinds of questions. God, why? 15-20 days of dealing with, how could they hate me so much? How could they do this to me? How could they sell me for 20 shekels of silver? Am I not worth more than that to them? How could they go home and deceive Dad by saying, an animal killed me? And how could God allow it to happen? I mean, put yourself in Joseph's shoes. How would you have felt? Anybody here think that the brothers might have been just a tad bit angry? I mean, Joseph might have been a tad bit angry at his brothers. Anybody think that? Anybody think he might have been a bit depressed? Anybody think he might have been wanted revenge? That he might have prayed, God, get him for me? Anybody think he might have run the gamut from being angry to being bitter to being resentful? You name the emotion, none of them good. 15-20 days with nothing to do, and he may have ridden a camel, he may have walked, with nothing to do but think about, how in the world did I end up here? Where is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who said, I will be with you always? Where is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who said, I will protect you? Where is the God who gave his father a dream and sent angels to walk up and down a ladder that went to heaven to tell his father that I am here with you? Where's the God who gave him a dream about sheaves and stars and sun and moon? How in the world will those dreams be fulfilled now? Joseph's dreams for his life have vanished. He had to ask the question, I wonder if I'll ever see my father again. Put yourself in his shoes. I think sometimes as Christians, this side of the cross, we look at Bible heroes and Bible stories, and we jump to the conclusion that, well, somewhere on that road, maybe within the first day or two, he got over it, and he began trusting God, and everything was okay. we think somewhere on that road, he already came to the point where he was willing to forgive because, after all, he was Joseph. Don't think for a minute that Joseph didn't struggle with, if I ever see those brothers of mine again, I'll get them. Don't think for a minute that Joseph didn't have to do some struggling to, if I ever see them again, I'll forgive. How do you forgive that kind of betrayal? Have you ever been betrayed by someone you loved, by someone you trusted? An employer, a family member, a spouse, parents, children. It cuts deep. It's painful. But what's interesting is this. The only way out of that kind of pain is forgiveness. Nothing else will do. But to forgive for that kind of pain doesn't come easy. Studies have shown that people who hold on to resentment, they become their own painful source of pain and heartache. To continue to resent someone else means that you are now your own captive in your own prison. That people who refuse to forgive wind up in their own prison because they can't get beyond what took place. And they end up the victim of their own pain. What's interesting in this story is that it does not tell us how Joseph came to forgive. It doesn't even tell us when he decides to forgive. The first clue of forgiveness isn't for 33 and a half years or so later. And even then, it takes a while. I'm not saying he didn't forgive before that. I'm just saying there's no clue. I'd love to be able to give you this story and to tell you the conclusion of how Joseph came to forgive. I read the story over and over again. It's not there. Not yet, at least. And even when it does talk about Joseph forgiving later on, how he came to be able to forgive is not there. So I'm going to do something I don't normally do in a sermon I give. I don't have a conclusion this morning. I can't tell you how it worked out. Not completely. In fact, Steve Zurich's speaking next week, so it's going to be 2 weeks from today. For the next 2 weeks, I'd like you to read that story of Joseph and stop right where it says he is sold to as a slave to Potiphar. Stop just before that, next to the last verse of chapter 37. Put yourself in Joseph's shoes and think about what it would be like to face that kind of hatred, betrayal, and abandonment. How would you work through it? From a human perspective, we can't. And yet, from a human perspective, we must. I know that in this room, there is at least quite a number of people who've experienced hatred and betrayal and abandonment. How have you handled it? Go ahead and read the rest of the story of Joseph and see if you can't pick up some clues. The thing is, if we're going to rise above adversity, we need to know that it's possible to do so. But we also need to admit, we must admit the adversities we face. And we must admit the difficulty of rising above them. we must admit the difficulties of rising above them. I want to read to you a synopsis. Thought I had it here. It fell out somewhere, but I will share with you the thought. It's from the book, The New Freedom of Forgiveness by David Augsburger. In that book, he says, in its essence, this, that if we do not rise above the adversity of resentment and bitterness and hatred, we become the victims. We become the victims of our own pain and our own heartache and our own isolation. In the coming weeks, we will talk about how Joseph overcame. It didn't come easy, I don't believe. It didn't come immediately, I don't believe. But it came, and this much clue I'll give you, it came through the grace of God. At this time, I'm going to ask Dr. Johnson to sing a song that, again, will see us through what we've just talked about.